Okay, now it's time for my impression of Republican presidential candidate frontrunner Ben Carson. He has no political experience, so he bases his entire presidential run on the fact that when he was a kid, he was a bad boy. Then he found Jesus, and now he's running for president, and he's a good boy and became a neurosurgeon and all that kind of crap. So now my and the media is saying, Ben, you're making this stuff up. You don't have a story like that. What are you doing? What are you doing? Now, my impression of Ben Carson. I'm Ben Carson. I approve this message. You know, the media is saying that my story, my dramatic, wonderful story of turning my life around is total poopy dupe, and it's not true. When I was a child, I was just horrible. I was horrible. I tried to hit my mother with a hammer. I attacked her with a hammer. And when I was a young boy, I threw rocks at people and at window, hoping to hurt them. And in school, a classmate and a friend of mine, I attacked them with a knife. I tried to stab them, and I think I did stab them. And it was horrible. It was a colicky baby, and I murdered 7 people on a subway. And, I think it was in a Subway sandwich shop is what it was. And I also would push old people down. With my foot, I would knock their canes away, and they'd fall to the ground. And I also, I kidnapped people, and I stole people's hot dogs when I went to the carnival. And I also, I would yell at people and call them horrible names after body parts. And I was a horrible, horrible, horrible human being. I was violent, out of control, a total asshole. And that's why you should vote for me for president, because I turned my life around. I found Jesus. He was standing right behind me, and I changed my life around, and I'm an inspiration. So vote for me. When I was a child, I was a violent asshole, and people should stop questioning whether I was or not. I really was violent and horrible and despicable. I'm Ben Carson, and I approve this message.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Well, welcome to the program.
Whatever. Ugh.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Guess who I am? Take a wild guess. Take a stab at it. Guess who I am? You'll never guess who I am. Think you can? Hey, that's not necessary. That's not necessary. Look, that's not necessary. You stop that. Welcome to the program. My name is Ron Van Dam. Join me for the next whatever. And I will entertain you like your little comedy puppet. I'll do whatever you want. I will whore myself out to you for the next period of time. I will do your bidding. I will drop to my knees and kiss your ring. Because that's what we do here in the radio host land. We do that. We express our opinions, but in the long run, we are sensitive little pieces of mush. At your beck and call, you sit there with your arms folded, saying to me, "Entertainment, little puppet boy." And I shall do so at this time. How are you today? Good to be with you. What a pleasure it is. You have no idea. You know, when you listen to this program, you're inviting me into your home. And if you're listening to this on your smartphone, in your car, something like that, you're inviting me into your car, which is a little awkward. If you're lying in bed and it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you can't sleep and you're listening to me right now, that's, I don't know what to say about that. So it gets weird. It gets weird, I must say. Hey, I was watching the news this morning, as I do sometimes. Something blew my mind. It just blew my mind. Apparently, there was a horrible school bus accident in the Massachusetts area, the area of the entire state. There was a horrible school bus accident, and some children were, you know, injured. Nobody died, but they were injured. And I've always said, why don't they have seatbelts on school buses? They don't have them. Buses don't have seatbelts, really. I don't know. I haven't been on a bus for a long time because it's incredibly pedestrian. But I don't think there are seatbelts on buses. I think you get on a bus and you sit down and you shake up and down and creates hemorrhoidal problems and all that kind of stuff, and you're sitting on a bus. And school kids never had seatbelts. They don't have seatbelts in school buses, not in Massachusetts, certainly, and not in other states. Most other states, they don't. But kids running around, they're running around the bus and hitting each other and, you know, and attacking their mothers with hammers. Oh, that's, I'm sorry, getting that confused with Ben Carson. Because he did that, you know. He's my man. He's my president, man. You know? Only way he would be more of an influence to me is if he chopped somebody's head off with a chainsaw. That would make him president automatically. Automatically for me. Automatically. Yeah. And then you find Jesus. That's it, man. That's, you can't prove any more to me than that. Anyway. I've always thought, why you have to secure a child in a car in just about every state. That's the law. You have to put straps across them. Of course, the strap is across their chest and their lap, not where it should be on a kid, which is across their mouth. I think that's where the strap should go. That's where the constraint should be. But it's not, and I guess they call that, what's the phrase, child abuse, whatever. Anyway, so, but you have to restrain the kid. If it's an infant, they have to be in a car seat, and they have to be wrapped up in bubble wrap, and I don't know. It's just like, you know, hermetically sealed in an envelope. I mean, that we protect children like little eggshells, like Humpty Dumpties. Humpty Dumpties, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Humpty Dumpty time. But in school buses, kids just run around the bus and the bus drivers, you know, yell at them, sit down, see it, sit down, sit down, kids, sit, I'm going to stop this bus, sit down. Kids are running around the school buses, hitting each other and playing games, and the bus is in motion, you know, it's going like 40, 50 miles an hour sometimes, and the kids are just running around the school bus, and I thought they should be restrained. Really, man? What is up with that? What's up with the kids running around school buses? So I just thought there should be seatbelts on school buses. So they have this school bus accident in Massachusetts yesterday, and this is a reporter. I'm going to play you a little piece because I see if you find this little clip to be a little bit weird. There's a reporter. This is WBZ, CBS News in Boston, and they're reporting on the school bus thing, and it brings up the subject of having seatbelts on school buses for children. And here's the report. This is the reporter. Listen to this. Tell me if you don't find this a little bit odd.
Whether or not there should be seat belts on school buses. We'll give you a closer look right now at statistics that national experts are taking a look at this morning. According to the National Highway Traffic Administration, 4 children die every year in school bus crashes. The thought is that adding seat belts to the bus could cut that number in half.
Okay, that's not a convincing argument. let me repeat what she just said. this is the big concern about seatbelts on school buses. Every year, four children die in school bus accidents. If they had seatbelts, it would cut the fatalities in half, which means with seatbelts, only two kids would die as opposed to four. Now, let me tell you something. If hundreds of kids a year were dying in school bus accidents, or even 80 kids a year in school bus accidents, I'd say, let's discuss the seatbelt thing. But four kids, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, these kids could have had irritable bowel syndrome or something, or maybe some kind of autoimmune system. I don't know what the problem, but I feel very bad for the four children that die in school bus accidents. But to invest all that money to cut the four down to two, I just don't. Here's what I think is a great idea. Tell the kids to shut the fuck up and sit in their seats and don't get out of it, and that's it. Stuff's going to happen. I mean, four kids a year. I mean, again, if it's your kid, horrific. But putting seatbelts in, maybe we'll cut it by one. Maybe instead of four kids a year dying, we're going to get down to three. So let's spend the money. It's certainly worth it. I found that to be a little bit much. But that's just me. Obviously, it's just me. Hey, you want to get a divorce? I love to play this every once in a while. I mean, not between you and me. I love you. I love you. I don't want to get a divorce. I love you. But I'm getting the children, and then I'm going to put them on a school bus. Here's this is my favorite commercial. This is not a comedy commercial. This is a real commercial. An attorney does this commercial. If you're getting a divorce, he wants your business. Listen to this.
Hi, I'm Steve Miller. I've been a trial lawyer in Florida and Massachusetts since 1985. If you and your spouse hate each other like poison and want to get out of the hellhole you call a marriage, you've come to the right place. Look. You can waste your money screwing around with some paper pusher paralegal type, give thousands of dollars to some piece of crap three-piece suit downtown, blow your brains out trying to figure out why you wasted 25 bucks on the crappy forms you bought from the illiterate boob at the courthouse, or do what I say and do it now. We know what we're doing here. Look at this website, a work of art. Here's the story. Pay us a little and we get you a lot. Don't worry about the details. We'll take care of business and let you know when to crack open the champagne. Okay, time to move on. Go to the Get the Divorce page in the upper right corner, pay up, and you're on your way to getting rid of that vermin you call a spouse. We're here to help. Divorce EZ, a Florida law firm.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Sounds like somebody needs to learn to make better choices.
Yes, you do need to make better choices, but that's your problem. I can't deal with that. I have other things to do. I got my own problems. You know what I was thinking, ladies and gentlemen, and I do have this every once in a while. I think constantly. If there was a medication to stop me from thinking so much, I would be on it 24/7. But there isn't. I've tried meditation. Every time I sit down in a quiet room and play that relaxing crap music in the background, the phone rings, or the dog barks, or there's an explosion down the street, or a school bus. I don't know. It's always something interrupting my thought pattern. And then they say, breathe very deeply, and then let it out. And all it does is make me focus on my breathing. Oh my God, if I didn't breathe, I would die. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So that doesn't work either. And then I've tried that incense, but I misunderstood them, and I tried incest, and that didn't work out too well. No, It didn't. My sister was pissed at me. So I've tried burning incense insensitively. And I can't breathe, I guess like the room fills up with smoke, the smoke detectors go off. It just, nothing works for me to calm me down. And I'm not a very excitable person, but I'm very, very observant. I mean, if there's a bird feeding its young 6 miles away, I'm aware of it. I'm not psychic. I'm just super sensitive. So anyway, so I try to relax. I try all different things to relax, but I was thinking about my life. It was my birthday yesterday. Thank you. please sit down. Please, no more applause. Please sit down. Thank you. I appreciate it. But please sit down. I was thinking about it was my birthday, and I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, you know. It's interesting, and I hope you can carve this out of your head as well. When I was a little child, let's talk about me. When I was a little child, when I was just a boy, I had a little play radio thing. It was there was a company called the Remco Company. It was a toy manufacturing company, and they made this little radio. And you could broadcast to any radio in the house. And that was pretty good technology for back then, back in 1727. It was amazing. So I would sit in my room, and I had a little microphone and this little console in front of me. And I could broadcast to all the radios in the house. And you could also, because the proximity of the houses in my neighborhood, I think 3 or 4 houses, I would come over on a certain frequency on their radios, even in other houses. So I really wanted to be a radio person. I wanted to have a radio show or be a DJ and introduce music and stuff like that. I really wanted to be that. And I even told my mother that I wanted to be that. And she said, oh my God, I've made a mistake. This kid is going nowhere. But I convinced her that I wanted to do this, so she enrolled me in the Columbia School of Broadcasting. It was a company in Connecticut, not the Connecticut School of Broadcasting, the Columbia School of Broadcasting. And they sent me manuals in the mail along with these big records. And some of you kids don't know what records are. They're like big fucking CDs. And they were on phonographs. And I would play it, and I was supposed to repeat what the guy said on the record. And he would say, now repeat after me. It's a great time to buy new clothes, and it's easy to do. And I would repeat that. And they gave me a little recorder with little tapes on it, and I would send the tapes back to the Columbia School of Broadcasting, and they would grade me. And I did rather well with that. And I was in New Jersey, so I didn't have a real New York accent, certainly didn't have a Massachusetts accent, certainly didn't have a Southern accent. I had no accent at all, so I was doing rather well. When I got to college, this is all about me, when I got to college, I was with the New York University radio station. I was really into it. And then I got into television and television writing, and then I did a television show when I moved up to Massachusetts, and then I got into radio about 25 years ago, and I've had a radio show on the air for about 25 years, and then I got into this podcasting crap because now I, you know, that goes all over the world and stuff, and I can say crap and things like that. And I also do a Boston, a regular broadcast radio station too. So I've always done this. I've always wanted to do this, and I ended up doing that. And I said to myself, you know, and I do other things too that make a lot more money than this, but this is not so bad. It does well for me. And I'm saying to myself, you know, that's a lucky thing, Ron. Sit back instead of burning your incest and having you know, all these kind of weird things going on and meditating and doing yoga positions where you put your feet over the back of your head and scratch your butt. Instead of doing that, just sit back and realize that you're doing what you wanted to do as a boy. And I'm saying to you, people listening to this podcast, oh, I'm saying to you, was there anything when you were a child that you wanted, not for an occupation necessarily, but I love art and I want to paint. You don't have to sell paintings, but you paint throughout your life. You exercise that dream that you had as a child, something you wanted to do as a child. And then if you haven't done it yet, pick it up and start doing it. Fulfill the dream that you had when you were a child, and it becomes very satisfying. It gives you continuum throughout your life. It's important. And I found peace with that, and I hope you do as well. Find your interest. Find your passion. And you don't have to do it professionally. If you can, that's great. But if you don't, it's okay too. The passion that you had when you were a child, think back, find it, and do it, and exercise it. Do it for fun. Do it for fulfillment. And think back when you were a boy or when you were a girl. What was your dream? Make that dream come true.
When I was a boy, I had a dream all about the things I'd like to be. Soon as I was in my bed, music played inside my head. When I was a boy, I had a dream. When I was a boy, I learned to play. Far into the night and drift away. Don't wanna work on the milk or the bread, just wanna play my guitar instead. When I was a boy, I had a dream. And radio waves kept me company in those beautiful days when there was no money. When I was a boy, I had a dream. When I was a boy, I had a dream. Finding out what life could really mean. Don't want a job 'cause it drives me crazy. Just wanna sing, do you love me, baby? When I was a boy, I had a dream.
Do you know that there is one item that can not only increase your home's beauty, but its value? That would be placemats. Hello, I'm George Karanapikopoulos, owner of George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse, your one stop for all your placemat needs. We have a placemat for every room of your house. That's right, placemats are not just for the dining room anymore. Anywhere you might make a spill, or maybe where you eat, like in front of the TV, I do it all the time like you. You want a placemat. We have fancy placemats like in bamboo or teak. That's right, teak. Nice plastic laminate ones for no stains, even blue. We can custom make you placemats in as little as 2 weeks. Come to our showroom at the intersection of Route 27 and the Holbrook Turnpike. You're going to like what you see. Your placemat is waiting for you at George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse.
Unbelievable. That is so freaking cool. Ladies and gentlemen, how you doing? You good? You doing? You fine? How are you doing? All right, today I'm going to talk to a young lady who is fascinating. We're going to talk about a book that she wrote that is about how to break up with people. That's right, baby. And I know that at various junctures in your life, you had problems in telling people to get lost, to go to hell. Now, some of you do it rather well. Oddly enough, too well. But most of us have feelings and have sensitivity and don't know how to tell somebody else to get lost. I don't want to see you anymore. I want nothing to do with you. If I never heard from you again, I would be fine. Back off. Get out of here. You're not good for me. You're ruining my life. You're a negative force upon my positive spirit. Please go away. Don't come back. Find something else to do. Go bother someone else. Stay away from me. But we can't bring ourselves to say that to other people, because other people have feelings. Has anybody ever broken up with you, told you to go to hell, to get out of their lives? You're no good. You want nothing to do with them. Has someone said that to you? It feels horrible. You start second-guessing yourself. Am I really that bad? Maybe I am a terrible person. What's wrong with me? Maybe I should see a therapist. And of course, you don't admit it, but it eats away at you day after day. I've been rejected. Why would anybody reject me? Why, I'm a wonderful person. I did everything I could for my friend, for my whatever. And yet I've been dumped. I've been rejected. I've been told I'm no good. I'm not good enough for somebody else. It hurts. It's confusing. It's defeating. It doesn't make you feel real good about yourself, nor about anything else. You get angry, you get hurt, you cry, you laugh, you sorrow, you pay. So I thought this is going to be a fascinating conversation. I've got to interview this author who had the nerve to actually write a book like... Why the nerve of you writing a book like this? Her name is Jane Waxman. And breaking up is hard to do. I wish I had that song to play, but I don't really care for Neil Sedaka. So I don't really like his songs at all. So I'm not going to play it because I don't want to. So guess what? I'm not going to do it. let's explore this topic right now, shall we? Hey, Jamie, how you doing?
All right, Ron, how are you doing?
Great, thank you so much. Thanks for being here. I couldn't wait to do this interview because I thought, finally, somebody has come along and is talking about the stuff that we all go through, and this is the one thing that we don't know how to do it.
Yeah, and we don't really know how to talk about it, right? Because, like, it's true, we all go through this, and yet we... Yeah. Sort of take this experience and think it must only be me and what's wrong with me. And that was my incentive for writing the book, is after I went through it the first time,
yeah.
We don't just go through it once, I looked around and thought, is this okay? Like, is this normal? Because I don't know anybody else who's talking about this. So how can I need to relate.
Yeah. I think we all just feel so guilty about everything. I think that's what childhood is. You're brought up to feel guilty. And you don't want to end things because you think it's, I don't know how to do this. I don't want to hurt the other person. And it's probably my fault. And maybe I should just put up with it and be quiet. And I guess it's a question of, I don't know, it's a question of not having the balls to do it.
I mean, I think some of it is about having the balls or the eggs to do it.
Eggs,
for
I'm
sure.
Sorry. Eggs,
I also think, no, please. I have a little bit of both myself. I think another part of it is, too, it's really also about taking care of you. And I think we, you know, I don't know about you personally, but I can speak from my own experience.
Yeah.
I grew up with a lot of people with martyr syndrome, where, you know, you have to do it for everybody else. And I think we are told in the society, I mean, even the word selfish sounds hard to say.
Yeah.
Like, it's not okay to be selfish. It's not okay to take care of yourself. Put yourself second. So when it's time to put ourselves first, especially with initiating a breakup, or even sometimes breaking up with someone else is also a way to help them move forward. We
True.
Have this guilt and shame, like you said earlier, around the idea that we aren't supposed to do this. This hurts somebody. Instead of looking at it from the other perspective, like, this can help us both have the room to grow and to bring the things into our lives that we need so that we can be better people.
Yeah. And, you know, when one thinks about a breakup, it's always in the sense of a romantic relationship, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, husband, wife, that kind of thing. And your book is interesting because it goes beyond that. It goes to people that you deal with in everyday life that are just, it's just not a good relationship. It just doesn't mean anything. It's not healthy, but yet we don't do anything about it because it's not our significant relationship thing. And we put it to the side, but it's interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, there are a lot of books about how to break up in a romantic relationship. And I, you know, so I didn't want to write that. I also made a significant point to not do a chapter on breaking up in a romantic relationship because any of the information can be used in any relationship, really.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the research that I did point to was about romantic relationships because that's where the research, where scientists and science have gone in terms of studying relationships. But yeah, for me, this was like, you know, you'll have the other part of it is you go into a romantic relationship thinking about breaking up on some level because you're thinking, is this the one for me? Or, you know, will this last? And you don't really do that. You're not born and, you know, when you're born, you don't look at your mom and think, will this last? You assume it will, whether or not it does.
Actually,
and, you know, friends, you don't meet a friend and think like, oh, how long will we be friends for? You think, I made a new friend. So it's also because we just don't have that thought in our head with most other people that we aren't prepared for those type of breakups.
Actually, I do. I guess there's something wrong with me, but I actually,
oh, yeah?
I actually do. I actually think, oh my God.
Like, what do you mean? This is interesting.
Yeah, no, I see it down the road a lot and I figure, oh, you know, whatever. But yeah, that pops into my mind at first. It always does. Yes.
I wonder if that's because you are more hypersensitive to the breakups you've already had in your life.
Oh, I'm just
where like you've taken account and
I'm an overthinker. I'm an overanalyzer and overthinker. That's why I do radio, just like you. You actually started as a radio producer. So how did you end up writing about this, Jamie?
Well, I started on air in a small town in Ohio and then moved to New York and became a talk radio producer.
Right.
And, you know, the thing was, I started on an internet radio show eventually in New York called Iyada.com, and I worked on a show about sexuality and relationships. Yep. And what I saw was I had worked a lot in talk and politics and comedy, and that was really wonderful, and I learned so much, but here you see me breaking up with that. What I got from the sexuality part was that there was a real need for people to talk about relationships and sexuality that wasn't being met. And I needed to talk about it in my own life because, you know, that's partially how we find our passion, right? Or is how we find our passion.
Yeah.
So for me, I went from, when the sexuality radio ended, I dabbled in radio a little longer, and I missed radio all the time. Mm-hmm. But I also felt like this calling to do more education and talk more about topics like relationships right. and sexuality. So I then went back to school and did a lot of other things to further my career and my own learning.
Interesting.
And broke up with everybody I ever knew. No, I'm joking. I didn't
well,
do that part.
Actually, you'd be my idol if you did that. But anyway, don't most of us end those relationships by simply trying to distance ourselves from them and let them deteriorate? Is that the way that most people handle these things?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It is on some level, especially for the person doing the breaking up. Mm-hmm. It's the easy way out. Yeah. It's not the easy way out for the person being broken up with. But, I was mentioning earlier to someone about ghosting, which became very popular a term. It wasn't actually a term when I was writing the book. Mm-hmm. It came out as soon as I finished my draft, of course.
Oh, of course.
Because there was a huge New York Times article about Sean Penn and Charlize Theron,
yeah.
who had a relationship, and apparently it ended when she just stopped talking to him mm-hmm. and returning his calls. And he then was like, oh, I guess we're not in a relationship mm-hmm. anymore. But, on the other hand, with that story, it became a news story. So obviously somebody was still bothered by the fact that this is how the relationship mm-hmm. ended. And so it's easiest, but it's not, there's no closure and there's no way for both parties involved to fully move on. There's always that thought, what if you run into the person that you didn't say goodbye to or, mm-hmm. That you didn't break up with. There's always these lingering thoughts about what if when you don't end the relationship, or if you end it, and research shows if you end it on a positive note, mm-hmm. you're doing everybody a favor because you both have an easier chance to move on. So, face-to-face, while ideal, isn't always going to happen for people, but finding a way to just say, hey, I can't do this anymore, and mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about it even if that's where you're at.
Yeah.
It's better than not saying anything.
I guess. I get tired of being called an ass.
It's not easier.
No, it's not easier, but I do. I get tired of being called an ass because when you say to somebody, this isn't working out, the immediate reaction that I've always gotten from the other side is that, well, it's because you're an ass, because you're, you actually are a nasty person and you're an idiot and this is just as well and don't ever talk to me again. So when you tend to be honest sometimes, the other person will take their anger out on you like click of the fingers and all of a sudden you're a horrible person. Does that happen a lot?
That definitely happens in my therapy brain right now.
Yeah.
I'm finishing up a degree in therapy. It goes to saying to the other person like, well, what is it that I said that made you feel this way? Like, why are you so angry? It just feels like you're so angry at me right now. Like, kind of bringing it back on them if you feel like it. If you just feel like, if that's how you feel, I'm not really ready to engage. I mean, it's also a reminder, like, sure, somebody might say this to you, but there are two people in every relationship. So it's not just what you are or do to them. It goes both ways.
I guess. It's a very difficult
thing. Well, what do you say when someone says that to you? What do you do?
If they say it to me, I say, I pretty much say, okay. I say, that's cool. Because, I don't get angry. Most other people get angry when I do it to them. When they do it to me, I don't get angry. I just say to myself, well, that proves that this wasn't going to work anyway. So that, I guess it's more closure.
Okay.
There's more closure for me than it is for them, I guess, in that sense.
So when someone says to you, like, well, yeah, so when they say, like, you're an ass, basically what you say is, okay, this wasn't going to work.
Exactly.
Then obviously.
There's my case in point. That's why. So that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on some levels, you've taken the higher road and not engaged in the, discourse about what that means, which also, I'm sure, honestly, if you followed up with them or if somebody followed up with them, there's still some lingering, stuff going on there that breakup
absolutely.
Doesn't sound like for the other person
absolutely.
It's clean.
Absolutely.
So,
And yeah. To be honest with you, I don't mind being called an ass. I'm sure I am to some people. That's fine. That's not a big deal. You know, that's all right. Actually, it's a nice label. I don't really mind it all that much. What about people that like phone conversation people that just never stop talking? I've had so many relationships in my time because I do talk shows, so people think that, you know, I'm just talk all the time. Some people, they just continue to talk and all about themselves, and you feel like saying, shut up. These are the people that say, to make a long story short, and they never do. And I do have trouble saying to them, shut up. Is this a question of honesty that we're talking about? Is that the bottom line to all of this?
I think honesty is the bottom line, but I also think it's about how you frame it. Like saying, you know, shut up, you talk too much is going to be a defensive. It's going to create a defensive reaction.
Yeah.
You know, so instead you can say, hey, today, you know this person talks a lot. Right. So I only have 10 minutes to hear what's going on in your life.
Yeah.
So, or I only have 5 minutes to you know, catch up with you. So I want to hear the most important things so that you're throwing it out there to them. Like, you know, I'm giving you a time limited experience with me. And now you have to like, so I'm telling you from the start where you're not like, you're making it more about you than about them.
Yeah. So that
is not, it's not you, it's me.
Right. Ugh.
I mean, it's not as honest as saying, gosh, you really talk a lot and I wish you would shut up. But when you say something like that, what impact does that actually have on the other person? Is it getting across the point you want, or is it just going to make them feel like they have to defend themselves?
Yeah. It's a fascinating book, and it's how to break up with anyone, and it's great. It's available everywhere, I assume.
Yes, I assume so too.
Okay. Well, actually, yeah. How does someone follow Jamie Waxman? I'm not in a stalking sense, but as far as following your career and what's going on, how do you do that?
I'm mostly updated. I have a Facebook page, which I spell my name funny. It is Jamye Waxman. And then I'm on, my Twitter handle is just Jamie, so Jamye.
Cool. Hey, it's been fun talking to you. Great book, great concept, and the best to you, and hopefully we can talk again in the future.
Thank you. I'm glad you didn't break up with me just now.
No, Jamie, I don't know you that well, but thanks. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're almost out of time. Check your watch. Synchronize your watch. I'll meet you back here again tomorrow around the same time or anytime you want. You can listen any time of day at all. I mean, these shows are posted to this thing, this website that you're on, by 9 o'clock in the morning, sometimes as early as 7 o'clock in the morning. It's in there in early morning. So, you know, you do what you want to do. I really don't care. You want to have a drink while you're listening? Help yourself. You know, I don't really care. You know what I read? Oh, this is very exciting. And believe me, I'm not promoting alcoholism any more than states and casinos promote gambling problems, gambling addictions. It's all the same. Here's my point. Alcohol, vodka, wine, all those things have no sugars in them. Ron, that's wrong. We all know that those drinks have carbs, and carbs turn into sugar. You know they don't. Check it out. Google this, my friend. Alcohol has no sugar in it. There might be sugar alcohol, but that is not that's not absorbed by the body. What? Yeah, now if you have a fruit-flavored wine, or like a Manischewitz Concord grape kind of thing, or a sangria, or a mixed drink that has pineapple juice in it or cranberry juice in it, then yeah, that's sugar. But the straight alcohol itself, white wine, for example, and dry red wine, have no sugar. Have no sugar. And vodka and gin and all that wonderful stuff that you find in bottles, the sugar is not the problem. You will gain weight from them. They do have calories. You will gain weight if you drink a lot, yes. You'll also pee a lot, so I don't know. But sugar is not the problem with alcohol. And I was so happy to hear that there is no sugar in alcohol that I went out and had a few drinks. And but I caution you this. I riddle you this, Batman. Drinking alcohol is not good for you. It increases your blood pressure. You can gain weight from it. It's not good for your liver. It's not a good thing to do, but in moderation, it's okay. It's all right. If you're a diabetic, you shouldn't be drinking alcohol anyway because alcohol affects you in different ways, but not the sugar problem. So I'm just saying this goes absolutely nowhere. This is just between you and me, but if you don't believe me, do the Google thing. Google, is there sugar in alcohol? And the answer is no. And I'm not talking about rubbing alcohol, although you can take vodka and rub it all over your body. I don't care. As a matter of fact, when I was a kid, I don't know if I should be talking about this, but we had a drinking game where, oh man, I don't even want to talk about this. Suffice to say, it was a drinking game, and it involved sucking up the alcohol, but it didn't come out of a bottle and didn't come out of a glass. So now you make your own story, and this is actually disgusting and awkward for me. But I'm just saying, whatever. it's so much time for me to leave. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace. Oh my gosh, it's time for me to leave. So did you know there's no sugar in alcohol?
Whatever.